Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody's having a good and fruitful day. So we had a couple of big stories that I'm going to wait to talk about. So anybody saw the headline? Disney going through another set of setbacks and cutbacks, and we got a bunch of stuff. So yeah, let's jump right into this because I think there's a lot of good stuff to talk about. So the first story of the day is going to be involving a movie that's coming out this Friday and has really gotten some rave reviews around everything that's been talked about. And that's Dungeons and Dragons. And so I wanted to talk about the what I've heard as far as people that have seen it, and so the numbers. So this comes from Deadline, and it says Paramount rolls the dice on Dungeons and Dragons revamp, eyes possible $65 million worldwide opening, box office preview. Paramount and Hasbro One, with the greatest of intentions, have created an extremely fun, broad audience appealing feature take on the classic RPG role-playing game entitled Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves, which is already certified 90% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Not an easy feat with a genre movie of this caliber, and 94% with moviegoers. That's a great sign. Paramount blasted the movie appropriately, so out of South by Southwest on opening night to great response. And they've screened the pick extensively, including a partnership with Amazon and the walk-up to its opening. Okay, so however, tracking has not been kind to the $150 million production. 50% co-financed by E1, only seeing a $30 to $40 million dollar start stateside. The hope is that the walk-up business of the word of mouth will over-index the movie at 3,850 theaters, which inherits all the premium theaters from Lionsgate's John Wick 4. The previous feature with D&D didn't go so well under a new line, with a $7.2 million domestic opening, $15.4 million more stateside, and another $34 million worldwide 23 years ago. That picture starred a number of fresh faces and also included Jeremy Irons. This version of D&D touts Bridgerton's Rian Jean Page, Chris Pine, and the Fast and Furious Michelle Rodriguez. The competition for John Franco Daly's and Jonathan Gilstein's directed movie is Sony's Uncharted, which opened at $44 million worldwide and ultimately made $148.5 million in the United States and Canada, ultimately finishing with a little over $400 million worldwide at $120 million production cost. Sony declared the feature franchise off those results of the big screen off that Sony PlayStation game. And if Dungeons & Dragons can potentially emulate those results, well then, mission accomplished. Official previews in the United States and Canada start Thursday at 3 p.m. So, let's talk about this. I think this has got a very interesting audience, okay? It's one of those things where I don't play D&D, but I'm sure there are many people out there. As far as comic book fans, I'm sure they're going to be really, really excited for this. Everybody that I have talked to about this has said they loved it. They have absolutely loved it. It is a great time. So I hope this does well. Now, that being said, you have John Wick. And John Wick just absolutely crushed it at the box office last weekend, making over $74 million. So I'm really curious to see if people are going to turn out for this movie, or are they, because John Wick was so good, are they going to go back to see John Wick again? I don't know. That's going to be fascinating to find out. I think all of the big previews that are that have been out has been helping the word of mouth. The fact that it premiered at South by Southwest was another big factor. I do think, though, you know, this has to have a very, very big Friday night. And this has to. Otherwise, yeah, it's not going to be looking so good. If this can make $30 to $35 million or $30 to $40 million, that would be great. That would be fantastic. And John Wick's still making its money, because if this could make that much money, it would be taking money away from John Wick. And so I really think that there's a possibility for it. As I said, the preview showings really helped. And the basic word of mouth and everything else. And I think the early preview. So I'm really curious to see this or see how it does. I doubt this is the one I'll probably go see. And I'm probably going to wait one more week and we'll get, you know, double feature in. But nonetheless, what do you guys think? Do you think this looks fun? Did you see the first Dungeons and Dragons movie? Do you think this one's going to be better? Leave me your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so let's move on to the second story. And the second story is about a movie that's coming out later on this year. And arguably, this is not in the summer slate, thank goodness. It's already packed as it is, but it is going to be a November release. And I'm talking about Dune 2. Dune 2 is one of those movies that everybody is looking forward to, because Denis Villeneuve is a fantastic filmmaker and he does not get the recognition that he deserves. So this comes from Deadline, and they're talking about, so the headline reads, Dune 2 won't be debuting in Venice, but a festival launch is still in play. And I can pretty much, I think I know why they're not putting it in Venice, but we'll talk about that after. The sequel, one of the most anticipated movies, currently has a November global release launch date. So Venice is too early, we hear from sources, partially because the visual effects work still has to do with it, and partially to late release date. 2 years ago, Dune opened to much fanfare on the Lido before Toronto, New York, and other festivals. The Warner Brothers release was staggered globally between September and late October when the film launched in the United States. Dune 2 may still get a fevered festival berth, however. New York, which runs September 29th to October 15th, is a possibility, for example. The legendary produced movie stars Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Dave Bautista, Stellan Skarsgård, Josh Brolin, Javier Bardem, and Charlotte Rampling returning to the franchise with new cast members Florence Pugh, Austin Butler, and Christopher Walken, and Tim Blake Nelson. Denis Villeneuve's sequel will explore the journey of Paul Atreides as he reunites with Chani and the Freeman while on the warpath of revenge against the conspirators who destroy his family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the universe, he endeavors to prevent a terrible future only he can foresee. The shape of this year's A-list festivals is gradually beginning to emerge, even if there's more remaining questions than answers. We know that Cannes is likely going to attract Indiana Jones and Martin Scorsese, among others. And by the way, that was confirmed yesterday. That was one of the pieces I did, is that Indiana Jones is going to be at Cannes. So that's going to be a major opening for them. And so that and Killers of the Flower Moon. And Wes Anderson is in the bag. Venice will surely benefit from a streamer contingent, while movies such as Ken Branagh's A Haunting in Venice and Sofia Coppola's Presley are also in contention. Among big movies that remain question mark for festival debuts are likely Ridley Scott's Napoleon, Michael Mann's Ferrari, Bradley Cooper's Maestro, and David Fincher's Killer Killer. And Maestro and Killer Killer are both on Netflix. And there are conversations at the moment about fall festival play. Ferrari still doesn't have a United States distributor, so there's a number of moving parts on that one. but things could come together quickly so that we'll have a fairy tale Venice launch. Okay, let's talk about this. I think it's important. This is one of those movies that is, I call it, and it's been called by others, second level. And second level because it is so deep and rich in the story. And there are so many movies, there are so many characters. This is another one of those ensembles that is just fantastic. And I think that if this is going to premiere anywhere, it probably will be in New York, just because of the fact that, you know, it's only 2 months out from its original United States launch date. And just like all of these other movies, like Indiana Jones, like Killers of the Flower Moon, I think this is going to get the buzz, like a John Wick 4, like, you know, all of these movies that are at these festivals. Now, the reason why I said it wasn't going to be Cannes is because you already have two big movies, right? You have Indiana Jones 5, and you have Killers of the Flower Moon. And I don't think that it wants to risk being underwhelmed, if you will. Maybe the wrong word to use, but in the grand scheme of things, when you have two headliner movies, okay, like the last Indiana Jones and like a big Martin Scorsese movie, this is just up there. It wants to be the main attraction. So I think the fact that you're having this hold off, and plus this said, you know, visual effects are still that's why it's so late in the year, because the visual effects. I was talking with somebody today and they were, you know, we were having the conversation. And I have no doubt this probably will win the Oscar next year. We probably will be talking about this next year for the Academy Awards for visual effects. That being said, so I think that this is going to be a fantastic movie. I think the fact that this came out during the pandemic too really didn't do it any help any. So I think this is going to be a big movie. And I can't wait. I can't wait for this. It's got the cast that is just, it's stacked. Now you say, well, there have been casts like this before that have busted. Yeah, that's true. All you got to do is take a look at Amsterdam. Okay. I mean, we have a new movie, and as a matter of fact, the trailer dropped for it today. It's called Asteroid City by Wes Anderson. That cast is huge. So it does, these things do have a tendency to fail, but I don't think this will. Wes Anderson is a very niche director. Denis Villeneuve, he can do anything he wants. So I think this is going to be the big draw for the for any festival it goes to. And I think that it's going to be great. Don't be shocked. And I know this is a stretch. Don't be shocked if this is up for Best Picture, Academy Awards next year. Just saying. I know it's a stretch. Listen, if they can nominate Top Gun Maverick and they can nominate, you know, some of these other pictures, it could slip in there for a Best Picture nominee. I'm not saying it would win. I'm just saying there's a chance that it could definitely get a Best Picture nominee. Anyways, guys, what do you think? Did you see the first Dune? Did you see the 1984 David Lynch Dune? What did you think of it? Did you read the books? Are you excited for this to come out in November? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, let's move on to the next story. And that's all I can say about this story. This is just an absolute soap opera. It's a tragedy. I know every time we cover it here on the channel, it is an absolute tragedy. It is something that should have never happened. And I'm talking about the Russ case. And this is just, it's dragging on and on and on. And this is turning into a soap opera. And it's getting to be, very, what's the word? Old. I wish something would happen. So here is the article from the Hollywood Reporter. And it states, Russ prosecutor gets new lawyers as district attorney steps away. And trust me, I'll have a lot of comments once I'm done reading the article. New special prosecutors have been appointed to oversee criminal charges in the Rush shooting after the lawyer previously handling the cases was forced to step down. Jason Lewis and Carrie Morrison will serve as the lead lawyers in the prosecution of Alec Baldwin and Rust Armory Hannah Gunayarik in the Santa Fe District Attorney's Office announced Wednesday. The appointment of the Albuquerque-based attorneys comes after former special prosecutor Andrea Reeb was forced to bow out of the prosecution after Baldwin's lawyers pointed out a potential conflict of interest due to her elected position in the New Mexico House of Representatives. First Judicial District Attorney Mary Carmack Altwins, who tapped Reeb to handle the criminal charges, will also remove herself from the cases, according to the office. In a statement, Carmack Altwins said her, quote, responsibility to the people of the First Judicial District is greater than any one case, end quote. She will, quote, continue her record of prosecuting drunken drivers, collaborating with law enforcement, increasing diversion, and securing convictions against the most dangerous, prolific offenders, end quote, said a spokesperson for the office. During a hearing on Monday, the judge overseeing the prosecution found that the district attorney's office couldn't name a new special prosecutor unless it entirely recused itself from the cases. The ruling was the latest in a series of setbacks, starting with the downgrading of the charges against Baldwin and Gudianci Reeds, and ultimately culminating with claims that Reed was unconstitutionally appointed and wanted in on the prosecution to advance her political career. Lewis worked in the New Mexico Department of Workforce Stations from 2000 to 2010, the last year of the chief of staff, until he opened up his own law office, according to his LinkedIn page. His practice ranged from constitutional law to labor, according to the State Bar of New Mexico. Criminal law was not listed as one of the practice areas, although he may have experience. Morrissey practices law and criminal law as well as constitutional law, according to the State Bar. The District Attorney's Office said Lewis and Morrissey have, quote, extensive experience and trial expertise, end quote. Neither of the attorneys immediately returned their things for comment. Okay, I don't like saying this. This is going on long enough. This is going on absolutely long enough. And look, we're losing sight here of the grand scheme of things. A woman, okay, pictured there on the right of this picture, lost her life. Okay. The fact is that a gun malfunctioned one way or the other. Now, an armorer, okay, is there to protect not only the actors, not only everybody on set, but they are there to secure everything. That being said, there was an accident, okay? This is getting to the point where it's a joke, okay? And what I mean by a joke is this needs to be resolved. First, they wanted to make her husband EP, which is a joke, okay? So EP is an executive producer. Fine. Okay. The fact is this movie is always going to have a dark cloud over its head because of the events. Okay. This needs to get resolved. Okay. The lawyer basically saying that, well, she wanted to advance her political career and make a name for herself is bullshit. And I'm just going to say it flat out. It's bullshit. Okay. You're trying to get your client, Alec Baldwin, pictured there on the left, okay, off the hook. And I'm sorry, somebody has to take responsibility. They have to, okay? They have to. And at what point do we, you know, we've lost sight of the fact that she lost her life. And I'm going to keep her picture on screen, okay? She lost her life. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's a production company. I don't care if it's Baldwin himself. I don't care. Look, Alec Baldwin is not going to jail. We all know this. We all know this, okay? And he'll probably have to pay a $50,000 or $75,000 fine, and that's it. The armorer, Gutierrez Reeve, she probably won't get a job for a while, okay? If at all, okay? And she should be out of the business because now she can't be trusted at all, okay? And this is why, and we had Tyler on a couple of months talking about this, and he has worked in the industry. He's a PA, which is a production assistant, and he has been on sets that have had guns, okay? And they go through extensive and rigorous safety checks. And, you know, now, this will not eliminate guns in movies. This thing will not eliminate guns in movies. But what it will do is change. And I think we have to do something about this. You know, I could go on a rant for hours about this. The point is this, okay? She lost her life. We've lost sight of this now. Now it is just basically a posturing game, okay? Now everybody in that DA's office has to recuse himself or themselves. And, you know, the defense wins again. At what cost, though? At what cost? That's what you have to ask yourself. Does Baldwin really believe he's going to jail? I can't think that. I can't even imagine that. Okay? If you've seen how stars are treated in Hollywood, whether it's Ezra Miller or Jonathan Majors or Alec Baldwin, nothing happens. And this is the most severe. Because somebody died. So what are we doing? This needs to get resolved quickly and fast, judiciously. Okay? Otherwise, this is going to be going on for years. And I can't even imagine, okay, what her husband is going through. Because he's got to deal with this. The whole thing is a travesty. The whole thing is a joke. The lawyers should be absolutely ashamed of themselves to think that they want to further her career. They want to further their career and get a jump on this. Come on. Really? We can definitely be better. We have to be better. We have to be better as a society. It's appalling. I'm sorry, but it's absolutely appalling that we have people that think that they're trying to further their career off of somebody's loss of life. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this? What do you think about the whole situation? Have you been following the case the whole time? If you have, what have you thought of the rulings? Okay, do you think Alec Baldwin or Gutierrez Reed is going to go to jail? And what do you think should be done so this never, ever happens again? I would love to hear your thoughts in the comments. Please leave your thoughts down in the comments, guys. Okay. Let's move on to the big story of the day. And I was saving this for last for a reason. Ike Perlmutter. He has been with Disney for the better part of, I would say, over 10 years, more like 15 years. He's no longer there. Ike Perlmutter is gone. And that's a huge, huge thing. And this comes from Variety. So, Disney absorbs Marvel Entertainment and layoffs, dismisses Ike Perlmutter. Disney's cutting cost measures have reacted to the top echelons of the company. Isaac Ike Perlmutter, chairman of Marvel Entertainment, has been laid off, as is division, which is separate from Marvel Studios, is absorbed into other units of Disney. Along with Perlmutter, Marvel's Entertainment co-president Rob Steffens and chief counsel John Turturns were also dismissed. Dan Buckley, president of the division, is staying and will report to Marvel Studios chief Kevin Feige. Disney spokesman confirmed the departures to Variety. The 80-year-old Perlmutter, who owns a considerable share in Disney stock, was at the center of the activist investor Nelson Peart's months-long fight to join Disney's board. Variety reported in February that Perlmutter's backing of Peart's was due to at least in part of the CEO Bob Iger's decision to settle Perlmutter's control of Marvel Studio in 2015, which eventually reduced Marvel Entertainment to not much more than consumer products and comic book publishing. Basically, he got downgraded and demoted. Peart's ended his proxy battle in February after Iger announced his plan to reduce costs by $5.5 billion, which included reducing the workforce by 7,000 employees, as well as the expected return of the dividend paid for shareholders by the end of 2023. The decision to dismiss Perlmutter as part of Disney's cost-cutting measure is ironic, considering the executive's infamous reputation for pinching pennies, from holding Marvel Studios press junkets in Disney offices to forcing employees to reuse some office supplies. Perlmutter sold Marvel to Disney in 2009 for $4 billion. He'll be all right financially, I think. A figure that the company has recouped several times over as Marvel has become a box office behemoth that dominated the industry in the 2010s. He first took control of Marvel Entertainment in the 90s, when the comic book publisher was in the throes of bankruptcy and folded into Toy Biz, the toy company co-ran by Perlmutter and Avi Arad. Okay, so let's talk about this. A couple of things. Number one, okay, this guy has been there for a long, long time. He'll be fine. He's 80 years old. He has enough money to, you know, do whatever he wants for as long as he wants. That's not the issue. The bigger issue, okay, is he was having a major battle with Iger to basically get somebody on the board. And so that's long gone. But there's another major issue here, okay? And that was, he was the person that actually held up films. And when I say held up, I mean stopped from being produced. Films like Black Panther and Captain Marvel. Now, what do those have in common? A, they all made $1 billion. Okay, those two films made $1 billion over, okay? Captain Marvel made, 1.1, and Black Panther, if it didn't make $1 billion, it was very close to making $1 billion. But the diversity of it, and that's the important thing. Now that he's gone, the door is open. The door is wide open, and Feige has nothing to worry about. The fact that Disney's cutting all these jobs by the end of this year, okay, is going to tell you something. He has to now do cleanup of what Chapek was there for. Look, I think Marvel will be fine. I think Disney will be fine. They are in a shitstorm right now. I'm not going to lie to you. They are in a very, very bad place, because you've got the Victoria Alonso debacle, which is going on as we speak, okay? Jonathan Majors got charged just the other day, and he is supposed to be the future of this next phase, which is going to lead to a lot of questions. I mean, you have to. I don't think there's any dispute. If this is true, what he did, you have to recast Kang. There's no other way around it. The problem is, what do you do about, like, Loki season two? Do you shelve it? Because according to reports, Jonathan Majors was supposed to have more of an involvement. You're not going to go back and reshoot it, okay? I can't imagine that. Anyways, but the fact is that he's gone, and it's a good thing. And you know, cutting costs. Iger's doing what he has to do. And this is why he got to be able to run one of the greatest companies in the world for 15 years. Disney is just, when he was the CEO, they were giants. Absolute giants. So we'll see what happens with that. I mean, the next couple of things they've got to worry about, as I said, are the Victoria Alonso lawsuit and the Jonathan Majors debacle. And as those develop through the, you know, everything else, I'll bring them to you here on the channel and we'll have a discussion about it and everything else. Okay, guys, that's all I got today. Not the greatest day in the world for news. And I know, and I'm sorry about that, but I'm just dealt the cards. I don't, you know, get to choose the stories. So I do, but I don't. So these are the biggest stories that were going on in Hollywood today. So that's it. Stay tuned, guys. We're going to be doing, the Perfect Movie series. I will be recording for you. I will be recording April's Perfect Movie this weekend, which is The Social Network, the Aaron Sorkin absolute masterpiece about, of course, Facebook, starring, I just blanked it. Everybody said Andrew Garfield and, you know, and everybody else. I mean, Justin Timberlake's in there. And so that is going to be the Perfect Movie. But yeah, considering I forgot all that. But thank you guys very much for watching. I would ask that you hit that like and subscribe button. I'm trying to get this out to as many people as I can. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, that is my handle down there. Just go to the page, hit the follow button, or if even better, hit that like and subscribe button here. That lets me know that you're enjoying the content. And leave me some comments, and I'll get back to everybody. So that's it for today. Do the three things you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great rest of the day. I'm your host, David Steele, and this has been Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.